Good morning. This morning, Woman's Home Companion brings you Jean Abbey to highlight the shopping values at S. Can Sons. Jean passes miles and miles of counters in a week, and I think it's safe to say she takes a look at the shopping values on almost all of them. And now let's hear what she has to tell us about this morning. Miss Jean Abbey.
Thank you, Joe, and good morning, everybody. The new figure silhouette brought out by Paris dressmakers is certainly a lovely one and has won the acclaim of smart American women everywhere. Curves are definitely back in again. True feminine beauty is brought out in all its glory. High, proud bust line, dainty, tiny waist, and gracefully rounded hips. That's the story behind the scenes of the new fall and winter fashions. And the proper foundation will help you carry out that story perfectly. Fundamentally, the new corsets give a new redistribution of flesh, giving a new economy of waistline and blessed comfort. No longer is that famed hourglass look achieved through tortuous steel casings, lacings, and constant discomfort. Not if you're properly fitted by a competent corsetier. That's why I dropped in at S. Can Sons to shop foundations. They have a very efficient staff of 8 finished school graduate corsetiers, each with a diploma, thus proving their knowledge. Each is an expert and can advise you best as to just what type of corset you should have, how to bring out the best points of your figure, and how to camouflage the defects. Now, if you'd like to achieve that new 1940 figure in the approved Schiaparelli manner of Paris, try a form-fit foundation. Here's a clever way of illustrating the new figure, that of the small waist, curved hips, etc. Take a pair of scissors and open them as if you were going to cut something. That's what the new silhouette is. Bust line high and separated, waistline sharply in, and hips smoothly curved outward. So if you want to show your new fall frocks off to the best advantage, go to S. Can Sons on the second floor in the corset department and let one of their expert corsetiers fit you to a form-fit pagan charm girdle or an all-in-one. They're moderately priced at $7 and $7.50, and you'll revel in the new comfort and delight, not to mention the beauty of a scissors silhouette. Of course, form-fit foundation have talon fasteners for a more perfect fit. And now here's a tip on buying undies. When you buy rayon lingerie, you naturally want them to wash well, stay fresh, and new-looking for a long time. You want them to be nicely styled and made to fit you. And you want them to be pretty and dainty at all times. Then here are the undies meant for you. They're called Tobie's Chardonnay's Garments, which means that the fabric is a Tobie's, and Tobie's is spelled T-U-B-I-Z-E, rayon pre-tested for tailoring, washability, and wear. This means that the garment has been made under the rigid standards of the Tobie's Certified Quality Plan and ensures you satisfaction. I saw some lovely Tobie's undies called New Eve in the main floor rayon underwear department at Cannes. The panties in 4 styles, the step-in, bloomer, banded leg, or briefs are very specially priced at 59 cents each. Matching shirts are the same price. While on the second floor at Cannes, I visited the dress department. They certainly have a wonderful large selection of fall and winter creations. For instance, there's a lovely, lovely frock decorated with wise old owls, and the name of the frock is Wise Old Owl, too. This dress in green, vineyard, or black is accented with smart feet buttons, little owls on chains that snap on. The dress itself is colorless and has insets of draped shirring diagonally from shoulder to waistline, which is most flattering. It has a full skirt with bustle folders at the back, and a soft material belt fastened with a handsome buckle. When worn, there will be no bulging gap at the placket because it, too, zips smoothly closed with a talon fastener. It's priced at $25 and looks much more expensive. The buyer herself was wearing this Wise Old Owl dress, which proves its style worth. And here is good news for the young woman who wears size 38 to 50. Cannes now have a large selection of Lane Bryant dresses, which are exclusive in Washington with Cannes. They range in price from $10.95 to $25, and in sizes 16.5 to 24.5 and 38 to 44. In the larger sizes, they are 44.5 to 52.5. Each dress has the Lane Bryant slenderizing mode label and is designed along the new fall and winter trends. Everyone is designed with one thought in mind, to slenderize and flatter the figure. And of course, they have the talon fasteners. I saw one lovely dress suitable for all-round wear through the day. It is a jacket dress of classic black rib crepe combined with black satin. The dress, which can be worn well without the jacket, has a slenderizing V-neck with a beautiful jeweled ornament and has bracelet sleeves. The jacket is stunning with long sleeves. As well as black, this dress comes in wine, grotto blue, and crushed grape, and is priced at $22.95. Another label tip. It may seem that I'm harping too much on the subject of labels, but after all, that is your best guide to quality. As chilly fall winds are just around the corner, I suppose you are dashing around trying to select your new fall wardrobe. And whether you buy your dresses, skirts, and coats ready-made, or select the very design on your own, look for the label that says Botany. That's how you can assure yourself of getting the best. For Botany has long set the pace for dependable construction and fashion leadership in fine woolens. All Botany fabrics are fully sponged and shrunk, too. There is such a variety of new materials and designs. Visit one of the most famous woolen departments in Washington, namely S. Can Sons, and see their complete assortment of Botany fabrics. You'll find these on the first floor, and Botany is priced from $1.95 to $3.95 a yard. Some is all wool, and some has a little rayon in it for new effects. In your new season's dress-up spree, you mustn't forget those little touches that mean the difference between loveliness and unloveliness. Your personal charm is completed by a dash of fragrant toilet water and a dusting of sweet-smelling bath powder. It's taken for granted that you don't use conflicting scents. Therefore, Harriet Hubbard Ayer, the famous beautician, has created a delicate new scent and coordinated it into a complete series of perfume, toilet water, bath accessories, and beauty aids. This scent, reminiscent of the gay, clear, romantic scent of clover fields at dawn, is called Pink Clover. The entire series is packaged in delightful boxes and bottles spangled with pink clover leaves. You'll find Harriet Hubbard Ayer Pink Clover in the first floor toiletries department at Cannes. Miss Mooney, special air representative, will be glad to show you the series of Pink Clover beauty aids and bath accessories. Ask for Miss Mooney when you go in. Let's consider makeup now, for this is the thing that can either bring out your natural beauty or hide it. For the utmost in subtle flattery, try bourgeois Evening in Paris makeup, the rouge, lipstick, and face powder. Evening in Paris rouge is a new handmade process rouge of satin smoothness that blends imperceptibly into the color of your skin. It gives your cheeks a natural-looking and flattering blush. Harmonized with the rouge is Evening in Paris lipstick. It is made of only the purest ingredients and is exceptionally permanent. Both the rouge and lipstick come in four different harmonizing shades for every different complexion type. Bourjois Evening in Paris face powder in several tones is silky smooth of texture, imparts a subtle radiance to your complexion, and clings becomingly for many hours. All three items have that lovely, elusive Evening in Paris fragrance. Select your shades at Cannes in the first floor cosmetic department. Accent is on your youth. So says fashion, so says Lady Esther, creator of famous Lady Esther for-purpose face cream. As everyone knows, the complexion of youth as a whole is firm, clear, glowing with health and vitality. Age tends to break down the facial muscles, drawing them downward and dimming the clearness of the complexion. That's why youth and those who want to retain youth should use Lady Esther cream, because it is lighter in consistency. It doesn't pull the lines of your face down. Lady Esther for-purpose face cream, besides being delightfully light, will really clean your skin. Try it and see. It's in the first floor toiletries at Cannes and moderately priced at $25.52.92 a jar. A last beauty hint about your hair. Bring out its natural glory with Admiration Oil Shampoo. Admiration is not a soapy shampoo. It contains no alkali or harsh chemicals. With a single application, the film that hides the beauty of your hair is washed away, leaving it soft, lustrous, and shining. This without the aid of lemon or vinegar after rinse is too amazing, isn't it? But very true, as you'll see once you've tried it. Also, you'll find your hair much more manageable, too, which is a boon to those with unruly hair. There are two kinds, Admiration Oil Shampoo, and for those who prefer a lather, there is Admiration Foamy Oil Shampoo, and they both give the same wonderful results. In Cannes First Floor Toiletries, it is priced at 45 cents a bottle. After shampooing your hair, you must dry it. Sometimes this may seem an irksome task that has no end, but not when the drying of your locks is done with fluffy, absorbent Dundee towels. Dundee towels are firmly woven of high-quality cotton yarns and will stand a great deal of rough treatment. For this reason, Dundee towels are an old standby in homes with children, especially little boys who are likely to use a towel with much enthusiasm and action, but little consideration. Aside from all these good qualities, Dundee towels are beautiful in design. You can carry out the color scheme of your bathroom with them, and no, they will stay snowy white or clear in color. Yes, Care & Scent have a large selection of Dundees in their first floor linen department, and they're very inexpensive, too. I saw one in the 22x44 size, priced at 39 cents. Comes in white with a black or red border. You know, it won't be long now before we'll have to sleep under blankets. At times, we live in a harassed, troubled world and need even more our nightly stint of sleep. If you'd like to really relax and sleep comfortably and healthfully this season, why not sleep under Kenwood blankets? Made of choice, long-fibered wool, the Kenwood blanket is fluffy, fleecy, soft, and warm. It will give you years of satisfying service and will come through countless tubbings looking as fresh and beautiful as the day you bought it. These luxurious blankets come in a variety of colors and have rich, silken bindings. They range in price from $8.95 up, and you'll find a large assortment in the blanket department at Cairns on the first floor. While you're in Cairns, stop in the housewares department on the third floor and see the marvelous new Sunbeam Mixmaster. It has 12 labor-saving attachments, an efficient juicer, has a big, individual, easy-to-clean full-mix beater, and easy portability. Once the mixing speed is set, the beaters do not vary their speed as the batter thickens. And here is the newest improvement on the Sunbeam Mixmaster. It now has the exclusive Mixmaster Automatic Mix Finder. You simply dial to the correct mixing speed for the job that you want to do, and there it is. No bother, no guesswork, and accurate, pleasing results. The speed is all marked on the dial. Whipping potatoes, beating eggs, whipping cream for any job you might have. It's truly wonderful, and I urge you to go to Cairns and see it. The Sunbeam Mixmaster, including two bowls, a juicer, and strainer, is $23.95. Another time and labor saver is the Magic Chef Gas Range. This shiny white range saves time, fuel, and food. Accurate temperature control takes the guesswork out of baking. Roasts, cakes, pies, cookies, all done to just the right turn. The roomy, heavily insulated oven features the new exclusive swing-out broiler that makes baking so much easier. When you want to take out the roast, you don't have to scorch your hands going into the oven to pull the pan out. When you open the door, the racks swing out, too. Magic Chef also has a lifetime burner guarantee, assuring you of long, satisfactory service. This handsome range can be purchased on convenient budget plan, as you will see when you look at it in Cairns, in the third floor range department. While in the housewares department, drop by the Club Aluminum Waterless Cookware display and let Miss Dora Payne show you the many advantages of Club Aluminum. Miss Payne, who is the representative for Club Aluminum at Cairns, is a graduate nurse and an authority on baby foods. She can tell you how the vitamin and mineral content of foods is preserved when cooking with little or no water. That's why it is helpful for your family and especially babies. Club Aluminum Hammercraft Cookware is designed to give the utmost in beauty, efficiency in cooking, and lifetime service. There's a seven-piece set priced at only $17.97. This set includes three saucepans, two frying pans, a Dutch oven, and a griddle. And Miss Payne will suggest that you add the baking rack and the cleaner to keep it bright and shining. Before I say goodbye, I want to remind you that S. Cairns Sons have a Dr. Scholl's foot preparation booth on the fourth floor in the shoe department. There you'll find a pleasant, specially trained representative, Mr. C.C. Kruger, to help you solve your foot problem. There's a complete line of Dr. Scholl's foot preparations at moderate prices. Go to the skilled Dr. Scholl representative, who is most pleasant and kind, and let him fit you with a Dr. Scholl's foot easer, a scientific foot arch cushion. It is constructed so that by firmly but gently supporting the arch, it relieves all strain and pressure on the muscles and ligaments of the feet, and is priced at $350. My time is up, and Joe King is here. I'll be back again at 8:45 next Tuesday. Goodbye.
And so, with that last note in her little black book, Jean Abbey leaves us to garner more shopping news for next week's broadcast. Be sure to tune in then for more Jean Abbey notes on what's new in the stores. May we remind you again that Jean Abbey will be heard next week at a new time, 8:45. This is Columbia Station for the nation's capital. WJSV, Washington.
Prudential Insurance Company of America presents When a Girl Marries, dedicated to all those who are in love and to those who can remember. This is the story of two young people who were destined to know the joy and the heartache that love can bring. A story for all those who, like Joan and Harry, have come to know what it means to hope and plan for the future, and to dream of that wonderful day to come when a girl marries. Friends, one of the things that we do regularly on this program is to introduce Prudential representatives from various parts of the country. These are the men who bring the services and the aims of the Prudential to neighborhoods all over the United States and Canada. Today, I'd like you to hear Mr. George E. Connors, who calls on Prudential families in Somerville, Massachusetts, near Boston.
How do you do?
Mr. Connors, how long have you been with the Prudential?
For over 14 years.
Now, just what are your duties as the Prudential man in your neighborhood?
It would take a long time to tell the whole story, Mr. Gallup, but here is the general idea. I, of course, make regular calls on my policyholders, and when claims fall due, it is my job to pay them. And I feel that the most important job I have is the first purpose of life insurance is to place the cash in the hands of the families in time of urgent need.
And what else do you do, Mr. Connors?
Well, Mr. Gallup, the largest part of my time is spent in rendering service on existing policies. I try to do everything I can to make the Prudential Life Insurance fit the needs of the particular families. Changes in the family's needs and circumstances may arise, a different arrangement of their life insurance. Perhaps a beneficiary should be changed, or the type of policy, or perhaps the method of payment of premiums. I can't give you the full story, but those are some of the things that the Prudential agent is glad to do as an important part of his job.
Thank you very much, Mr. Connors. And now, friends, I'd like to say this. No matter how large or small your policy may be, the Prudential strives to give you the very best in life insurance service. Your Prudential man will be glad to help you in every way he can with any life insurance problems. And, of course, he never charges a fee. Joan Field. Today is very much a red letter day for Harry Davis, the man Joan hopes to marry. This afternoon, he's going to surprise his mother with the new apartment he's picked out for her. And most important of all, he and Joan have decided to get married sooner than they originally planned. So feeling as he does today, it doesn't seem as if anything could stand in Harry's way, not even the wealthy Mr. Stanley scheme to run him out of business. But for Betty McDonald, Harry's secretary, the day has been rather dismal. This morning, she took some flowers over to the new apartment for Harry's mother, only to find that Joan had already been there. Only Joan brought expensive red roses, which made Betty's own garden flowers look pretty shabby. So Betty has returned to the office, feeling discouraged and heartbroken, which is still the case when Harry walks in.
Hello, Betty. I'm sorry I'm late. I took my time this morning hashing it over with my landlady, Mrs. McCaffrey, and taking her into the deep plot for this afternoon. Now, when Mother and Tom come here to call for me at 5 o'clock, Mrs. McCaffrey's going to pack up all their things and bring them over to 284 Main Street and leave them over there.
Mm, that's nice, Harry. Mr. Farley was in.
Andy Farley?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what did he have to say?
He had plenty to say. Mr. Stanley offered to advance the interest on his mortgage, and then he brought up the subject of a lawyer that he wanted Andy to go to instead of you.
Do you mean that?
Yes, I mean it. Mr. Stanley meant it, too.
Gosh, I wish we had some proof.
We have.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
Andy got Mr. Stanley to write him a letter telling him what he was going to do for him about the mortgage. And he also got a slip of paper from him on which he'd written down the name and the telephone number of the lawyer he wanted Andy to use.
He did? Why, that's terrific. Where are they?
Well, I couldn't get Andy to give them up.
Well, why not?
He's so darn proud of them, he's carrying them around in his wallet and takes them out and looks at them about every 10 minutes.
Oh, that's not so hard. Why, he might lose them. They ought to be in the safe.
I know it. I suggested he leave them here, but he wouldn't do it.
Oh, gee, I'm worried about his carrying them around loose like that. Suppose something happened to him and they got lost in the shuffle. Where'd we be then?
I don't think there's any argument that would make Andy hand them over.
Hmm. Where's he gone?
Back to his farm, I guess.
Where did he say he'd been the last few days?
He said he'd been lying low. He was waiting for the letter Stanley promised to write him. He didn't want to come in here to see us until he got it. But the minute it came through, he walked in here big as life.
Oh, that's swell. Maybe I ought to take a run over to Cedarville and tell Professor Kilpatrick about it.
Well, wait a minute. I'd better call the hospital first. He may have left there by now.
Yeah, right? All right, call him up.
Give me Cedarville 211.
Oh, and Betty, look, would you mind doing something for me? I may be tied up this afternoon. I told my mother and Tom to be here at the office at 5
Just
o'clock.
A minute, now, sir. Hello? Is this the Cedarville Hospital? Well, can you tell me if Professor Kilpatrick is still there? He's checked out.
Oh, where's he gone?
Can you tell me where he's going? Well, thank you. I've got it. Goodbye.
Well, where'd he go?
To the Stanley Arms Hotel, right here in Stanwood. You can get over there in a few minutes.
Oh. Well, as I started to say, Mother and Tom will be here around 5. I've got some things to attend to this afternoon, and if I'm not back, do you mind keeping them occupied for a little while?
Well, for how long?
Oh, I don't know. Not more than half an hour. But if something happens to keep me longer than that, I wonder if you'd go over to the new apartment with them, and you can have the fun of showing it to them.
Well, I'm terribly sorry, Harry, but I can't.
You can't?
No.
Well, Betty, I expected you to. Well, you're supposed to go with me when they see it for the first time. You picked it out, didn't you? You're responsible for it.
Well, I'm awfully sorry, but I've got an engagement.
You've got an engagement? What engagement? Oh, I suppose I haven't got any right to ask you that. I'm sorry. You see, that's what happens when you get in the habit of counting on somebody to do things for you. You just don't remember that they've got any private life of their own.
I can wait here till 5:30.
Well, say, if you'll do that, I'll be ever so much obliged to you. You see, I thought I might find out from you how to get out to Andy Farley's place. I'd like to get that letter and that scrap of paper on the lock and key. Where does he live, by the way?
His farm's up near Elk Creek. It's a big place.
Oh, it'd take too long to get out there this afternoon, I guess. Maybe you could run me out tomorrow. Do you mind?
No, I don't mind.
Unless you've got another engagement.
No, I haven't any engagement tomorrow.
You sure about that? Because if there's a young man in the offing, you may as well tell me now.
I'd tell you if there were one.
I'm disappointed that you're not going to the flat with us. I wanted to be able to give you the credit of finding it. Mother's going to be crazy about it.
I'm glad you like it.
Say, what's the matter with you, Betty? You don't sound a bit like yourself today.
I don't?
No, you sound as if you didn't give a darn about anything.
I don't mean to sound that way.
Is anything the matter?
Oh, no. Not a thing in the world.
Oh, that's good. Because this is a very special day for me. I don't suppose I ought to say anything about it yet, but I've got to tell somebody. Listen, Betty. Joan and I are going to be married. Just as soon as Mother and Tom are all settled in the new place. Oh, I oughtn't to do it. I ought to wait. I ought to have more sense than to rush her into it. I'm not in any position to marry anybody, and I know it. But she wants to as much as I do. Isn't that wonderful? She's willing to take a chance at living on next to nothing with a guy like me.
I'm sure you'll be very happy.
Happy? I'll say we'll be happy. We may not have much in the way of worldly goods, but we're young and we're in love. And we'll say, what am I telling you all this for?
I'm sure I don't know.
No, neither do I. Except that you're so easy to tell things to that I've got the habit.
A few minutes later, finds Harry at the Stanley Arms Hotel, where Professor Kilpatrick has taken rooms. As he walks in on the professor, he says...
Well, Professor, it's good to see you someplace besides in a hospital.
Yes, I'm a well man now, ready for a good scrap. And nothing would give me more pleasure than to go after Ralph Stanley in a big way.
You can. We've got him.
What do you mean?
Andrew Farley's got a letter from Mr. Stanley.
What's in it?
An offer from Stanley to help Farley out in the matter of paying the interest on his mortgage.
Fine.
And that's not all. Farley was smart enough to get Stanley to write down the name of the lawyer he recommended in place of me, claiming that he'd forget it.
Oh, good. Then we can swing into action.
Yeah. Farley's willing to testify to the whole conversation, and I think if he does, we can get others to do the same thing.
That's all I've been waiting for. What a break to have the actual evidence for a cause of action against him.
Well, it's not in our hands yet.
Where is it?
Farley is carrying it around with him.
He mustn't do that. It's too valuable.
Well, that's what I think.
Well, didn't you tell him so?
I didn't get a chance. I didn't even talk to him. This has all been handled so far by Betty McDonald. Mm. She got to the office early this morning and Farley came in and told her all that had happened. He was gone before I got there.
Well, didn't she tell him to leave the letter and the scrap of paper behind?
Of course. But he wouldn't do it.
No.
He seemed to think it was safer carrying it around on his person. But I'll get it from him. I'm going to try to get out to his place tomorrow morning, and I'll tell him it's the only evidence we've got, and it ought to be under lock and key.
Now, be sure you do.
I will.
Say, this is going to be fun. To nail Stanley in his own bailiwick. To show him up in the town where he's the big squeeze.
You know, Professor, I still can't believe it.
Hmm? How can you believe anything else?
I don't know, but it doesn't seem possible that a man would go to such extremes to get another man he's never even met.
It's the sort of thing Ralph Stanley would enjoy doing. If his reputation's what I've heard it is. He never forgets an injury. And he considers that you've injured him irreparably by busting up his plans for his only son.
Do you suppose it would do any good if I went and talked to him?
No. Stay as far away from him as you can. Don't go anywhere near him. You'll spill the beans if you do.
Well, how do you mean?
Why, don't you see? He hasn't the slightest suspicion that we know what he's up to. If you go and talk to him, you'll tip our hand. Might even be dangerous for Farley.
Well, why would he tie up my visit with Andrew Farley?
Well, he might. Might go over everybody he talked to and find out where the leak was. He can remember that Andrew Farley was the only man to whom he gave anything in writing, which might be used against him.
Well, you think he would?
Well, of course he would, if he thought anybody was going to attack his reputation in Stanwood. You forget, Harry. He's been the big mogul around these parts so long. He's ruled the place with an iron hand. And he's come to think of himself as omnipotent.
Well, suppose I just went in and talked to him as man to man and tried to overcome his feelings against me.
Yeah, you flatter yourself, young fellow. If you think you can put yourself across with Ralph Stanley. You're not a person to him by this time. You're an obsession.
Oh, get out. He's human. If I went to him and talked to him and told him that I was just a young fellow trying to get along and asked him for suggestions, I'll bet you any amount of money he'd forget how he felt about it.
Yeah, well, you're a fool if you do. You'll do it against the advice of counsel, and I'm your counsel. I haven't the slightest doubt that Ralph Stanley would put on an act for you which would be completely disarming. I tell you, Harry, he's out to get you. He'll run you out of town if he can.
Before we leave you now, I'd like to give you some interesting information about the Prudential Insurance Company. In this company, all policyholders are also actually part owners. They share in the savings of the company. As a result, life insurance protection is furnished at a low cost, and the security and strength of the Prudential are enjoyed by millions of families. They think of the Prudential as a symbol of safety, as strong as the Rock of Gibraltar. Be sure to hear When a Girl Marries, brought to you tomorrow and every day, Monday through Friday, by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, Newark, New Jersey. Daylight saving time ends Sunday, September 24th. If your community has been on standard time right along, this program will reach you 1 hour later, starting next Monday. Otherwise, tune in next week as usual.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
11:30, sanitary food store time. Mother, you can't buy a better loaf of bread than Jumbo at the economical price of 8 cents a pound loaf, 15 cents for two. Buy several loaves of Jumbo bread at your neighborhood sanitary food store. WJSV, Washington.
Just a little kiss, just a little kiss. like the stars above me, and the little words that say you love me.
Once again, we bring you the romance of Helen Trent, who sets out to prove for herself what so many women long to prove, that because a woman is 35 or more, romance in life need not be over. That romance can live in life at 35 and after. Many smart French women agree that to have your lips look appealingly natural, yet ravishing and desirable, use Angelus Lipstick, A-N-G-E-L-U-S. This remarkable lipstick is the creation of Louis Philippe, distinguished French colorist. In it, he has blended colors to match the human blood. Rich, warm colors, so exquisitely subtle and alluring, and yet natural looking. For they blend with every shade of hair, every type of complexion and eye coloring. Many French women use Angelus on their cheeks and lips, too, to achieve lovely harmony in their makeup. Even the case of Angelus lipstick is chic in the French way. Dainty, gold-plated, and embossed with the fleur-de-lis design. You'll find it in all drug and department stores. And if you want a new makeup thrill, try the gorgeous new Formal Red. Deep, intense, and yet subtle as the scent of a rose. It makes lips look alive, compelling. By day, it is vibrant, pulsating, and after dark, it weaves a spell of exotic glamour. Try it. Formal Red, number 404. You'll find it goes beautifully with the colors most fashionable right now. Now, other favorite Angelus shades are Framboy, number 414, and Coronation Red, number 400. So, to gain a captivating Parisian touch to your makeup, use Angelus lipstick. See if it doesn't give the allure, the appeal to your looks you've envied and admired in other women. I repeat the name, Angelus Lipstick. Again, the romance of Helen Trent. Helen has been working very hard of late, organizing an exclusive Hollywood dress shop in partnership with Chris Wilson. But recently, her plans were completely disrupted when Continental Studios informed her that if she divided her energies on an outside business, they would cancel her contract with them to costume motion pictures. Yesterday, however, Mr. Carl Harper, an executive at Continental, used his influence to have the studio retract its unreasonable dictate to Helen. And Helen, believing that Mr. Harper's was a simple kindness, does not know that the whole thing was planned by his spoiled stepdaughter, Doris. Well, today, we look in on the yet unopened shop in Beverly Hills. Helen and Chris are in the office at the back of the store, and at the moment, Chris is just about to mention Doris. Listen.
Helen.
Yes, Chris?
Do me a favor, will you? I'm going to drive downtown and attend some things, and when Doris Harper comes by here, tell her I'm out and you haven't got any idea when I'll be back, will you?
Doris Harper?
Yes, the daughter of our benefactor, no less. I ran into her at the Derby at lunch, and she said she was going to drop in here.
Oh, Chris, I've been meaning to talk to you about Doris Harper. Remember the time she came by here and asked us for a job designing for the shop?
Oh, yes, but of course she wasn't serious about that. She was merely amusing herself.
Oh, yes, she was serious about it, Chris. Very serious. Mr. Harper talked to me about Doris when I was in his office the other day.
What do you mean, Helen? What did he say?
Well, I think we'll have to make a place for Doris on the staff of the shop here, Chris.
Helen, you're kidding.
What's the matter?
Well, good heavens, there would be a catch in Harper fixing things for you at the studio. You mean to tell me he asked you to take Doris on here? Did he do that?
No, of course not. He didn't ask me to do a thing.
Well, then what do you mean we've got to make a place for Doris?
Well, here's the way it was. Mr. Harper was saying that he thought it was ridiculous of the studio to tell me I couldn't be in business and work for them, too, and that he was going to try to arrange things for me, and I mentioned about being in partnership with you, and he said he knew you, that you were a friend of his daughter's.
Yes.
So he said his daughter, incidentally, was very interested in designing clothes, that she'd taken a course last winter at a fashion school in New York and done very well. And then I realized that she was the same girl who'd come here and asked us for a job.
And I told him about it and told him I met his daughter.
He brought all that in about Doris incidentally, huh?
Yes, really. It wasn't pointed at all, Chris. We were just talking. He said that he and his wife were very anxious to see Doris do something constructive and cultivate her talent for designing. Said he knew it was hard for young girls to break into different careers and so on. And then he dismissed it. It was all very casual.
Well?
Well, and yesterday, when I went to his office and he told me he'd fix things so that I could go ahead and own the shop here with you, he wished me good luck and all that, and said that he was sure that his wife and Doris would be among our customers, that Doris likes the kind of clothes I design, and, you know, he was awfully pleasant.
And so you feel that we ought to take Doris on here because her papa's done us a big favor, is that it?
Well, we don't have to, Chris, but I feel it would be the nice thing to do. If it hadn't been for Mr. Harper, think where you and I would be now. He knows that we know his daughter would like to work here, and if we don't make a place for her, he'll think we're awfully unappreciative.
I knew there was a catch in it. I knew it.
What have you got against Doris, Chris?
Oh, I don't like to say anything against any girl, but... Well, I don't like her, Helen. I emphatically don't like her. She's spoiled and selfish and a rotten sport and... Well, a few other things.
Oh, she impressed me that day I talked to her as being very sweet.
Well, she's not, I'm sorry to say. In my opinion, she's a... Well, a pest.
Have you known her a long time, Chris?
Yes, I used... Well, she runs around with the crowd I used to see a lot of. As a matter of fact, I used to take Doris out a couple of years ago myself, the season she made her debut. But she's a spoiled brat, and to tell the truth, I've avoided her for quite a while now.
And she sort of chases after you, is that it?
Well, it would sound conceited if I said yes to that question, but it would be untrue if I said no.
I see. Well, that does complicate things a little. But of course, in time, Doris will catch on that she's wasting her time on you, and she'll give up.
I hope so. Gosh, there's always a fly in the ointment. I've never seen it fail. I thought Doris was kidding coming in here and asking me for a job that day. I never dreamed she really meant it.
She's serious about designing. Her father told me so.
Doris Harper's not serious about anything but Doris Harper, Helen. There's no reason on earth why she shouldn't work. She lives the life of a social butterfly, and she's got enough money in her own name to buy and sell you and me a half dozen times. I don't want to take her on here, Helen. I don't want to have her around.
Well, what shall we do, Chris? Mr. Harper's been so nice. He told me that it took a great deal of persuading to fix things for me with the other executives at the studio. He went to a great amount of trouble.
I wouldn't be surprised if Doris didn't have a hand in that.
Oh, that's absurd, Chris. Look, don't hold anything against Mr. Harper. He wasn't the least bit pointed about Doris. It's all my idea that we ought to do something in return. I think we're really deeply obligated. Sorry, but we are.
And Doris knows we are, too. I'll bet you that's exactly why she told me she was going to drop in over here this afternoon and see me. Helen, we can't use Doris around here.
We certainly don't need her, but we could make a place for her if we had to.
Like what?
Well, for instance, there's always a scarcity of attractive blouses. We could let Doris try her hand at designing some of those.
She'll be a lot better financially and otherwise.
Maybe she won't be financially, Chris. She can do some simple things and perhaps do them more cleverly. I'm not trying to force her on you, but I just can't face Mr. Harper again at the studio unless we give Doris a try.
Yes, I know.
However, if you say no, Chris, then that's that. I don't want to overrule you. If you feel that Doris will annoy you and you can't get along with her here, then at all costs we won't take her on.
Oh, I can get along with her if I have to, I suppose. You're right, Helen. We're stuck with her on account of her old man. I'll go ahead and fix it up with her.
I don't think she'll be here long, Chris. Are you sure you don't mind now?
No. I'm just raising a fuss about, well, making a mountain out of a molehill, I guess. But you do all the talking to Doris, you hear? Your employer. I don't want her to think she's got me to thank. I'll stay out of it.
All right, I'll attend to it entirely. Well, I'm sorry we have this problem, Chris. I hate for you to have to put up with what it'll mean.
Oh, it's okay, Helen. You can't help it. It's just that almost every favor somebody does you in this world, you have to eventually pay for. Seems to be a law of nature or something, I guess.
I really feel quite bad about the position it'll put you in, Chris.
Oh, I've got nothing against Doris except that I just don't like her kind. She won't bother me around here. I'll just let her catch on that I'm disinterested and busy and I don't care about
her. Oh, Chris, there she is out in front, just coming in the store.
Here, where's my hat? I'm going to beat her. I'll look out the side way here. You go ahead and fix it up without me, Helen.
All right.
I'll see you later.
Okay. I hate to have to do this when Chris doesn't like the girl. I better go talk to her. Here she comes.
How do you do, Mrs. Trent? Remember me, Doris Harper?
Yes, of course, Miss Harper. How do you do?
Fine, thanks. Is Chris around?
Why, he just went out. He had some things to attend to.
Oh, poor Chris. He's always so busy. One of these days he's going to wake up and realize he's busied himself right out of all the fun in life. Oh, this is the loveliest dress on this form here. Did you design it?
Yes, I did.
It's superb. There's genius in this dress. Genius in every line and tuck. Oh, and the way the neck's cut. I think you're wonderful, Mrs. Trent.
Thank you. Sit down, Miss Harper, won't you?
Thanks.
I met your father recently at the studio.
Yes, he told me. He came home simply raving to Mother and me about your looks.
Well, I'm very grateful to your father for helping me out of a bad predicament about the shop here. I suppose he told you.
Mm-hmm. Carl's awfully sweet that way. He's always doing things to help people at the studio out of jam.
Well, he told me how seriously interested you are in designing, Miss Harper. I, of course, remember your coming in here before.
Oh, don't feel like you have to bother about me, Mrs. Trent, just on account of Carl. Oh, please don't. That's out of the question.
Oh, it isn't just that. Your father told me how capable you are. And I think it might be well for the shop to have a few things that aren't my work. Maybe some blouses or something?
No, now, really, you mustn't go to any trouble about me. I wouldn't want you to feel, well, you know. Carl wouldn't want you to feel that way either. Now, just forget it.
Don't misunderstand me. I realize that, of course. But as a matter of fact, I do think that the shop might be able to use some of your work if it's satisfactory. And perhaps we could give it a try if you want to. See what you can do.
If I want to? Oh, heavens. If you'd let me, Mrs. Trent, I'd adore it. If you really want me, just because you think I could design things that might actually sell. Oh, I'd be thrilled to death.
Well, it all depends on your ability, of course. The designs you've done, and if I think they show sufficient originality, then, well, we'll see about making a place for you here at the shop.
So Doris Harper's plan, into which she forced her stepfather, has worked out exactly as she wished it. And now, it seems that Helen is bringing the first note of dissension into the shop. How will Doris and Chris get along? And how will this affect Helen? Well, listen for Helen Trent tomorrow. If you feel that life is growing dull and humdrum of late, it may be simply because you yourself are looking plain, unexciting, the fault of your makeup, your lipstick. Then try the lipstick that many noted French women use to gain the allure for which they're famous. Angelus lipstick, A-N-G-E-L-U-S, the lipstick that has been blended to match the live, vibrant colors of the human blood, colors that strike an unusual note in makeup and give an allure beyond words. Many smart French women use it on their cheeks as well as their lips to achieve complexion harmony, and a single application will hold for hours. Get an Angelus lipstick today at any drug or department store at the same price as most lipsticks, and gain the irresistible allure many French women have. Helen Trent will be on the air at the same time tomorrow. Helen Trent's announcer, Don Hancock.
To keep household mechanical devices running smoothly, use triple-acting 3-in-1 oils. Get 3-in-1 at any hardware, grocery, or department store. Also in 10-cent stores and automobile accessory departments. Ask for 3-in-1 oil today. Once again, we present Our Gal Sunday, the story of an orphan girl named Sunday who was left on the steps of the cabin of two old miners who raised her from childhood in the little mining town of Silver Creek, Colorado, who, in young womanhood, married England's richest, most handsome lord, Lord Henry Winthrop. The story that asks the question, can this girl from a little mining town in the West find happiness as the wife of a wealthy and titled Englishman? Let me tell you about a remedy that thousands of people now use to get quick relief from the pains caused by headache, neuralgia, and rheumatism. People use it because the results are truly astonishing. This remedy is called Anacin, and the reason so many people rely upon it is that it was first suggested to them by their physician or dentist. Perhaps you, too, at some time, have been handed an envelope containing Anacin tablets. If you haven't discovered Anacin through this channel, then, by all means, discover it for yourself. For your own sake, to get quick relief, Anacin is certainly worth a trial. Of course, there's a reason why Anacin is so amazingly effective. It is made up of a combination of different medically proved and tested ingredients, not just one. It is like a doctor's prescription that way. For a prescription nearly always calls for a combination of different ingredients. Try Anacin on this basis. If the first few tablets fail to give the quick relief you want, you may return the unused portion and your money will be refunded. So, be prepared next time you suffer from a headache or neuralgic and rheumatic pains. Get a supply of Anacin at any drugstore today and have it on hand. Spelled A-N-A-C-I-N, it comes in tins of 12 and 30 or bottles of 50 and 100 tablets. And now, Our Gal Sunday. Much has happened in the last few days at Balmacruci Hospital to prophesy difficult days ahead for Sunday with two members of the staff. First, there is Nurse Rhoda Gray, who, because of her jealousy and love of Dr. Alan Brooke, has proved particularly objectionable to Sunday. And then there's Alan Brooke himself, whose personal interest in Sunday is becoming a major problem to her. However, these problems have been in some part counteracted. Although Sunday is facing her first long separation from Lord Henry, who is now a captain in the English army, she's been comforted, not only by his letters, but by a feeling and knowledge that there are times when their love brings them together in an unusual and beautiful manner, keeping both of them from feeling that distance can separate them. Sunday is now in the living room of the lodge, sitting with Lord Percy before a crackling fire. Listen.
Fire feels good these misty Scotch days, doesn't it, Uncle Percy?
Yes, it does, Sunday.
If you've been down to the village this morning, you must be tired.
Tired? Of course I'm not tired. Don't pamper me, Sunday.
I'm not pampering you, Uncle Percy. I was going to suggest that you stay here with me for a while. I don't have to go to the hospital until later on.
Do I look as if I'm leaving?
No, you don't. You look comfortable.
Comfortable? That's it. I'm too comfortable. Details of turning Balmacruci Castle into a hospital. Is that a man's work? No.
What are you talking about?
Morning, noon, and night I fuss about with lists, with orders. Try to give the hospital staff advice. They don't want it. They know better than I do how to equip a hospital. What do they think I am, a useless old man, eh?
Well, of course not, Uncle Percy. You aren't old, and you're certainly not useless.
Well, if I'm not useless, why am I not in the army? Answer me that.
Well, because, well, there's no need for you to be, Uncle Percy. And you served in the last war.
Nonsense. There's no reason for me to be up here in Scotland, sitting before a fire, warming my toes, or to be in London. Anywhere but here.
But, Uncle Percy, you offered Balmacruci Castle to the government to be used as a hospital. That was a wonderful thing.
But why did they tell me to stay here and look after it? It's a conspiracy, that's what it is.
Uncle Percy, you're needed at Balmacruci. That's why you were asked to stay here. Uncle Percy, you know, I've been thinking of something the last few days.
What?
The attitude of the people everywhere, all over England. No matter how they're feeling inside, they're taking all their troubles, all their problems cheerfully.
I noticed that too, Sunday.
It's inspiring. That's the way life should be. full of courage and hope and doing the job at hand.
Now, look here, my dear. Are you trying to tell me in a roundabout, feminine sort of fashion that I shouldn't be complaining about doing work that a fair to middling bookkeeper could do?
Uncle Percy, of course I'm not.
Not?
After all, your work is more exacting than that. There's no sense in pretending that it isn't important because you know it is. But didn't you check the plans of all the rebuilding necessary in the castle? Didn't you get a letter from Sir Robert Winslow, chairman of the hospital board, congratulating you on suggestions you made?
Yes, I did. Yes, thank you, I did.
And this morning when you went to the village, wasn't it to personally supervise orders for food supplies for the hospital?
Yes.
And you say you aren't doing enough. Uncle Percy, I'm ashamed of you.
Oh, Sandy, you're a nuisance. You won't even let a man complain in peace. Oh, bless my stupid brain. I forgot. Got a letter for you. Brought it from the village to save the boy bicycle ride out.
A letter for me?
Yes. Where did I put it? Must be in my inside coat pocket.
Uncle Percy, is it from Henry?
No, it isn't, Sandy. Oh, here it is. And see for yourself.
Oh, thank you. No, it isn't Henry's writing. Uncle Percy, it's from Arthur. From Henry's brother, Arthur.
It is it? What's he doing writing to you?
Well, I wanted him to write, Uncle Percy. He came to see us before Henry left England. He was in his uniform, waiting for orders. He promised Henry to turn over a new leaf.
Well, read it, my dear, read it. What does he have to say?
Well, let's see. Dear Sunday, don't be surprised at my writing you. You said I might, you know. And you're the only one of the family at home I can write to. Uncle Percy would...
What's that?
Uncle Percy would probably growl himself into a minor fit if he even saw my handwriting.
Blasted impertinence. Me growl myself into a fit? What does he mean?
Though he might be secretly pleased, because I know jolly well he cares for every one of us very deeply. Even me, the black sheep of the Brinthrop family.
I have the right to Arthur myself and ask him what he means. Discussing me in a letter to you.
It's a long letter. Something to tell you.
What is it?
Wait, what's this? Something about Thomas McTaggart.
Yeah.
Uncle Percy, Kathy's husband. But that means he may have seen Henry, because Thomas is Henry's orderly. Let me see. Uncle Percy, yes, there is something about
him. Well, read it, my dear, read it.
Where did it begin? Oh, here. And so then I went to the company canteen. I was outside the door.
Yeah?
I heard voices inside. A voice I vaguely recognized and saying...
And the captain says to me, he says, Thomas McTaggart, I'm glad to see you, man. And how would you like to be more orderly? And so I look the captain in the eye, and I says to him, attention, second lieutenant.
Carry on, men. The captain's orderly here?
Yeah, that would be me, sir. Private McTaggart speaking.
Private McTaggart? Thomas?
Well, sir, I don't know how you... What? Lieutenant Arthur Brinthrop. I can't believe my eyes, sir.
Thomas, it's good to see you again.
Aye, well, it's the first time in over 3 years.
Yes, it's all of that, Thomas. Is your captain about?
Oh, aye, sir, that he is. In his office at this very minute, working on his reports. If you'll come with me.
Oh, wait a second, Thomas. There's something I want to ask you about. Let's stand in this hall, shall we?
Aye, Lieutenant. Yes, sir. What did you want to say to me, sir?
See here, Thomas. I heard in a roundabout way that your second lieutenant is being transferred. Know anything about it?
Aye, that's the truth, sir. And I'm wishing this very instant that you were taking his place. Ah, 'tis a great company, sir, and it's a great captain we've got. Are you thinking of joining us?
Well, yes, I am.
Oh, that's good. I mean, captain...
Not so fast. I'm on my way of doing this, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. I was only thinking that when captain...
Yes, I know. Your captain will have to approve of me first.
Oh, but he will, sir, he will. How can he help it when...
Where's the captain's room, Thomas?
Oh, well, I'll take you there.
No, thanks, I'll find it. Down hall of fifth,
it's the third room on the right, Lieutenant.
I'll find it. Cheerio, Thomas.
Cheerio, sir.
No name on the door. Well, here goes. I'll try this one.
Come in.
Captain, I'm a lieutenant from the...
Arthur.
Henry. Why, Henry.
By Jove, Arthur, this is a surprise.
Yes. Yes, it is.
But...
I talked with Thomas, and I told him I wanted to see the captain. I had no idea you were captain.
I say, Henry.
Sit down, Martha. Well, I didn't know you'd come from home.
Henry, is it true your second lieutenant is being transferred?
Oh, yes. Is that why you're here, Arthur?
Yes. I'd like to take his place. There are some friends of mine in this company, and now that I know that you're...
But, Arthur, what does your commanding officer say?
If you approve, he'll recommend me for a transfer.
Arthur, I don't know. You see...
Oh, please, Henry. Please, do this for me.
Arthur, I'll have to think it over.
Oh, come now, Henry, you can do it. It all depends on you.
Yes, I realize that.
I worked like the dickens to get my commission. Now I want a chance to prove myself worthy of it.
To prove yourself worthy of the course, yes.
Now, see here, Henry. I made you a promise before we left England. I promised never to cause you any trouble again. And you said we could be friends.
Yes, and I know, Arthur, I know. I am your friend. And I'm your brother, Arthur. You see, that's the point. I want to do what's best for you. It isn't that I don't trust you. But I can show no favors, not a hair's breadth. Now, without meaning to, there might come a time when you'd expect that hair's breadth of favor.
Oh, I swear to you,
Arthur. Let's not risk that. What do you say? You stick by your own company and you'll get your promotions. You know, human nature is a strange thing. We're brothers. A great deal of the misunderstanding between us has been because I'm the older. But we have that same situation here. The time may come when you would resent taking orders from me, orders that, well, you'd accept willingly from someone else.
Oh, but at home, you offered me another chance. It will mean a lot to me, Henry.
Arthur, I... Very well, Arthur.
Oh, Job, Henry, I'm awfully
glad. I'll be glad to have you in my company, Arthur. But I want you to know that once you're part of it, officially, I can consider you no longer my brother. If there's a job to be done, regardless of what it is, and I have to choose a man from my men, and you're the one chosen, I expect courage from you, the best you have to give. I expect it from you as much as I do from myself. Well, with this understood, I'd recommend your transfer to this company.
What will happen to these two brothers fighting side by side? One, a captain, the other, a subordinate. Will Henry be placed in a difficult position? Will Arthur's past misdeeds play any part? And what of Sunday's own situation at Balmacucci Hospital and Nurse Rhoda Gray's jealousy because of Dr. Alan Brooks' infatuation for Sunday? What dramatic twist will the personal problem surrounding Sunday take next? Be sure to listen tomorrow to the next episode of Our Gal Sunday. Our Gal Sunday is brought to you by the makers of Anacin, that remarkable way to get quick relief from the pains of headache, neuralgia, or neuritis. The reason Anacin acts so fast is because it is like a doctor's prescription, a combination of medically tested active ingredients. Next time you have a headache or neuralgic pain, try Anacin. You'll be amazed at what it does for you. All drugstores have Anacin in tins of 12 and 30 or bottles of 50 and 100 tablets. Anacin is spelled A-N-A-C-I-N. Our Gal Sunday will be on the air at the same time tomorrow, 12:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Saving Time. Your announcer, James Fleming.
Why cook two sets of meals, one for baby, one for the family? Get Klatt's strained baby foods. Klatt's foods are already prepared, pressure cooked to safeguard vitamins and minerals, smoothly strained but never too liquid. Many doctors approve Klatt's strained baby foods. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.